Thank you very much for the invitation. It's always a great pleasure to have to do with Ronald and the Liberales Zukunft Forum. It's not the first time, and I'm always very pleased with it. Italy, you know, is certainly an extreme case, at least within the boundaries of what had been Western Europe since the end of World War II. It might seem a pathetic, grotesque case nowadays. Probably when he spoke about the Austrian state television, Ronald never watched the Italian state television. That is really something beyond belief. But liberal democracy is everywhere in very bad shape. No significant country seems openly to oppose the current trend. Everywhere, with a higher or lower degree of vulgarity, there's decisional paralysis, all vested interests hijacking political institutions, furious electors, outraged youth, sometimes short-lived enthusiasms around a new and flamboyant leader that systematically create new disillusions shortly after the wave of enthusiasm expires. Liberal, representative, constitutional democracy has fallen into disrepute almost everywhere, to the point that the marriage between democracy and liberalism, I mean individual freedom, human rights, the rule of law, no longer appears absolutely indissoluble as we were accustomed to think. It is very telling, I think, and it was already mentioned, that in the forefront of this rejection are the very countries, or some of the very countries, that 20 years ago saluted the birth of their new democracies as the liberation they had been seeking for 40 years. For most of us in the West who were born or educated after the end of World War II, the symbiosis between liberalism and democracy had been obvious for decades. It could seem a natural development, a sort of logic, consistent consequence of the gradual extension of the right to vote, purely and simply, up to the obvious result of universal suffrage. This was possibly the last refuge of the old idea of progress, not as the result of human effort, but as the necessary course of history towards a more and more enlightened future, an idea that was, by the way, so successfully disputed in this very city more than anything, anywhere else in Europe, probably more than one century ago. This was a very candid idea of democracy, a rather American idea of democracy. In Europe, things had been much more complicated. And even until the end of the fascist rule in some countries, despite the absence of democracy in many countries, many liberal thinkers had very clear in their mind the potential tyrannical power of democracy without checks and balances. We lost that consciousness until a few years ago. When they discussed the democracy, people like, for example, the Italian philosopher De Ruggiero, or the Spanish philosopher Ortega y Gasset, they all had in mind, yes, liberal democracy, but they also had in mind Jacobins' experience in France, for example. The idea of a volonté générale that was very reluctant to be limited by some guarantees in defense of the individual, and that was one of the two ways democracy had appeared in the history of the Western world, after all. And the other was the Greek, or better said, the Athenian one. And also Plato's critique of democracy deserved, these thinkers thought, to be first taken seriously in order to be able to falsify and reject it afterwards. But in the eyes of us, of young, unawares, Americanized Europeans of a few decades ago, democracy was liberal democracy by definition. We had well in mind the risks carried out by the tyranny of the majority. That was something topical in the discussion of the liberal thinkers in the previous century. But we usually thought of it as a social rather than as a political threat. The tyranny of the dominant opinion, the intolerance towards every form of nonconformism, something that could sometimes have been experimented also in the left, in student assemblies in the years around the year 1968. And we thought of this rather than the risk that the actual exercise of really democratic political power could lead to an impoverishment of individual freedom or to a less limited and balanced government, which is the threat posed today by populism throughout Europe. Unlike some of our 68 school friends, most of us liberals at the time had a more sober, more realistic idea of democracy. A theory that had been able to come to terms with the elite theories of social sciences. In a democracy, the demos has the power, limited but real, to assign the kratos, to check and balance it, and to be checked and balanced in turn. This framework was to an extent somehow reassuring, at least for us citizens of the West. The same thing probably didn't work at the east of the Iron Curtain. Soviet totalitarianism, together with the surviving Mediterranean fascism, were the best providers of identity for Western democracies, almost the guarantee that they would stay liberal enough not to risk of appearing similar to those regimes. 2 decades after the fall of communism, some disturbing developments are coming to the surface. But it is probably at the end of the 70s that the push to an ever greater inclusion and empowerment of all individuals in the actual exercise of their citizenship and liberal rights was gradually weakening. That push, the idea that individuals should be put in the condition of really taking their individual liberal rights in their hands, had originally been a liberal idea. It was born in the Victorian age in the same country, England, that had given birth to liberalism 2 centuries before. The idea was that public powers should actually put the individual in the condition of making real use of their individual liberal liberties. It is true that almost all national political classes and all state bureaucracies had long been squandering for their own advantage much of the wealth that they were supposed to make available to the majority of citizens. But there was an overreaction on both sides of the Atlantic that substituted that liberal consensus that had been shared in most of Western countries by moderate left and moderate right alike, while we contained and opposed the Soviet communism, substituted this liberal consensus with the so-called Washington consensus of the 90s, that was much less interested in the expansion of the demand and therefore more inclined to accept ever-growing inequalities. This new consensus, not to the liberal system that had opposed communism from the 40s, more or less, to the late 70s, was the system upon which the international organization was reconstructed after the fall of communism. At the beginning, it could seem a success because of the enormous growth caused by the new markets and most of all by the simultaneous technological revolution and also because of easy indebtedness. By the way, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were much more successful in destroying the communist threat than Reagan, Thatcher, and Pope John Paul together, in my opinion. But I am old enough and was young enough in my short political career a lot of decades ago to remember a previous time when not only communists, but also a lot of mainstream socialists accused a wicked English liberal economist called John Maynard Keynes of having rescued capitalism from its certain downfall thus preventing the rise of a happy global socialist society. It was we, the progressive liberals, that rescued capitalism at the time, and the communists and mainstream socialists were right into accusing us for this. Anyway, now that the crisis broke out, we have at the same time citizens that are empowered by their technological capability of having their voice heard loud and clear, much more than any time before in history, and at the same time we have the breakdown of any widespread political culture caused by the almost total absence of realistic political paradigms different from those accepted by most of the political and media establishment in the last 20, 30 years. On the one hand, the barbarity of specialization, some of you already mentioned something like that, that was first prophetically exposed in 1930 by a Spanish liberal philosopher, José Ortega y Gasset, has deeply affected also the capacity, the capability of the ruling classes, not only of the lower classes, of those less educated, and of the intellectual establishment as well, of the Hochkultur, to perceive a broad picture of our present historical situation, something that is obviously necessary for any possible therapy. And on the other hand, no utopian idea of the 20th century has been falsified so deeply as Lenin's theory about growing simplification and automation that in the end would make his own cook able to easily run the state affairs in a matter of decades. The liquid, as it is called, cultural personality of most of our contemporaries is inconsistent with the need for new paradigms capable of staying deeply rooted inside the tradition of liberal democracy, human rights, the rule of law, individual liberal liberties. I wouldn't be surprised if the economic growth in non-Western societies that promises prosperity without freedom prompted many of our fellow citizens in a matter of years to accept it more and more as a temptation. Many others of our fellow citizens are already proposing some easy, obvious answers to the crisis, but have usually no idea that they had already been proposed, debated, and variously experimented in the past, and miserably failed. Imperative mandate, for example, and non-negotiable demands. This would destroy government by discussion and finally lead to the state of stasis in the Greek meaning of civil war. So would direct democracy as a system of running day-by-day affairs where no one would be responsible for anything, deciding today something totally different from what they would joyously decide the day after. Now, the commercial freedom that is due to globalization has also triggered growth in a large part of what was at the time the Third World, as no international plan of aids to development could even dream of doing. But in our countries, the lower and middle classes are impoverished, social protection is weakening, the human landscape is rapidly changing, ordinary people are enraged, political systems seem impotent. One of the reasons is that the qualities required to be elected are less and less those necessary to be effective democratic leaders capable of mastering a complex political and economic international perspective, of understanding the existing constraints, of seeing the risk of unintentional consequences of political decisions, already difficult enough, and being recognized at the same time as political leaders, and win an election, and be re-elected after doing what was to be done. As a consequence, there is a lack of political debate and ideas. In most of our democracy, we are not now used, I'm happy that it has already been mentioned, not to choose policies, but to select personalities. Selecting a charismatic chief is at least apparently much easier than understanding politics or economics or constitutional law. It apparently makes politics more interesting and more likely to stir passions up. Unfortunately, it does not help at all. Not only a charismatic leadership implies the spiritual proletarianization of the followers, as its chief theorist, Max Weber, candidly recognized, although he supported the idea of an electoral system capable of selecting charismatic leaders. Focusing just on personalities means that ordinary people tend to support not the most capable, but those who are perceived as most similar to themselves. Think of George Bush Jr., just to give an example. Therefore, in some of present-day political debates, it is self-evident that the sun is rotating around the earth. Everybody is able to see. And only a few hopelessly pedantic nerds expect us to believe that the opposite happens, that it is the Earth that is rotating around the sun. And it is the average quality of the political class that is bound to deteriorate further if the first quality required of a politician is more or less that of not caring about his or her reputation too much. If the personality and the character is what matters and not the political choices, negative campaigning is bound to grow, as it is happening in the United States since the Gary Hart affair in 1988. Kennedy and Eisenhower, Mirabeau and Jefferson, Cavour and Garibaldi, Willy Brandt would all have probably the high chance of being turned out before starting any political career just because of their sexual life. Berlusconi seems to be an exception. It is not, because it is true that it is weakening his position through his sexual life, but when he came out, nobody knew about it, and it was only elegant dinner that he was organizing in his castles. In the country that has the worst political class in Western Europe, that is obviously my own, the use of blackmail on blackmail specialists is already a basic instrument of political competition. And therefore, the first quality required of politician is not to be caring too much about their own reputation. Now, is there a way out? First of all, we should all become aware that in the global world, all the individual European states have no weight. It is quite obvious that populist politicians think that every of our problem comes from the bureaucrats in Brussels, because bureaucrats are the stereotype of everything that populists dislike. And because national or state governments usually blame the bureaucracy in Brussels for the choices that they themselves have done unanimously for being able to say this is an imposition of Europe whenever there is something unpopular to do. And of course, people sooner or later think of it. But in our global world, the weight of our single individual states, not only of the smaller members of the European Union, but also of the bigger ones, including Germany, is comparable to the weight of Belgium in the first half of the European of the 20th century in Europe. It was a country that was respected by everybody, that was developed, civilized. It had also came out from the worst colonial horror of the previous century, and yet its own interests were crushed when a more, let's say, powerful and not particularly tolerant neighbor decided to do so. Now, nobody is going to invade us in with arms or with armies today, but the weight of our states, of our governments as individual states in the global world is similar to the weight of Belgium in the Europe of the first half of the 20th century. Whatever proposal is made by politicians in Europe, which is the continent that is most affected by the global crisis, in order to propose a change of the paradigms that has led, that have led to the crisis, has no chance of being even heard in the global world unless it is the voice of Europe. Because Europe, yes, has the size and has the power and has the importance for being heard loud and clear throughout the world. But there are no new politics that are policies that can be enforced at state level wherever. It would be like playing a bridge with the rules of poker. You would lose whatever you bet. What is needed is a defense of politics. We should urgently need a defense of liberal democracy, a defense of rationality and seriousness in politics, a call to responsibility, individual responsibility at every level, which is exactly what populist politics is destroying. There are no simple recipes, but one thing is certain, and Italy is the pitiful demonstration. Never give up to populists. Never accept treating electors as 11 years old children, as Berlusconi recommended to his candidate, because those are the established rules of commercial advertising. And therefore, Berlusconi told his candidate, when you speak in an electoral rally, you should think that you have in front of you 11 years old children. That's what my specialists in advertising always recommend to my televisions. This is the first thing that has to be avoided, in my opinion. And also, when other politicians, other parties are using these techniques, it should be reported as it is. Now, as Italy's case or Hungary's case show, once you begin, there is no end to barbarianization and decay. First civic, then ethical, then political, in the end comes political and economic disaster. Now, the arsenal of liberalism is still very rich, but of course, given the situation, it takes a lot of fortitude indeed to make use of it nowadays. I saw that some of the recipes that emerged from this debate so far were quite common, and I'm not surprised. Thank you.